Welcome to the Benefits Executive Roundtable, hosted by Dorothy Koshu, President of Advanced Benefit Consulting. Dorothy is a nationally recognized benefits and compliance consultant and group health broker. Here, you'll listen to industry experts break down the latest news and trends in employee benefits, healthcare reform, regulations and compliance, all designed to empower executive decisions.
Welcome to the Benefits Executive Roundtable. I'm your host, Dorothy Koshu, and I'd like to welcome my guest today, Faith Borges from California Advocates, who's also a legislative advocate for the California Agents and Health Insurance Professionals, or CAHIP. Welcome, Faith, and thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Dorothy. As always, great to be here.
Great. I'm really happy that you're here. It seems like we have to do this every couple of years. It's kind of one of those things, I guess. For those that may not be aware, Governor Newsom recently signed SB 770 into law, which is aimed at obtaining federal financing for a state-run single-payer healthcare system here in California. Can you please give us some background on this bill and what it's all about, just to kind of get us started on a conversation on this?
Sure. So this is different than previous attempts that we've seen in recent years, AB 1400 being the most recent, and then a few years prior to that, SB 562. Those bills were enacting the entire framework of single payer. They stated objectives about what's covered, what isn't covered, though that list is incredibly small because it did envision a system where the state is the sole provider of all traditional medical, all vision, all dental, and there would be no more private coverage available. The state would be the true single payer, like a DMV type model, where if you want to drive in California, you have one option, you get your license and your ability to move your vehicle through the DMV, it would be the same for healthcare. SB 770 is a different approach and not put forward by the sponsors that we typically see introducing those other legislative attempts I mentioned. So those previous legislative attempts were run by the California Nurses Association. This has a different source, Healthy California Now, that previously had a pretty strong affiliation with the nurses and those other attempts. But this is really kind of a divergence of views and sponsors in terms of their objectives. This is a more modest approach, addressing some of the nurses and others' long-held view that the federal government would provide half of the financing for a state-run single-payer system. So this bill really tests that theory and says, okay, we're going to direct the Secretary of California Health and Human Services to research, develop, and then to pursue those waivers, which is the way that we would be able to receive Medicare financing and our Medicaid or in California Medi-Cal financing with the federal government, with the objective of a unified healthcare financing system, which is a very kind of fancy and refined way of saying single payer, that incorporates, you know, specified features, again, those features of single payer, where there's a comprehensive package of medical, behavioral health, pharmaceutical, dental, and vision without cost sharing, which is some of those criteria that we saw in previous legislative attempts. They're very specific about that, no cost sharing. So theoretically, it would be done through that federal financing if they're able to secure the waivers. But then also the state would need to come up with the additional funding that I think we'll talk about a little bit later. So this is more of a let's see if we can get that financing so we can have more of an adult conversation around future single payer proposals that would be put forward to go over the who, what, where, why, when, and how.
Okay, thank you very much. I know that in previous podcasts and other formats as well, we've discussed the Democratic stance overall on single payer in Sacramento. Can you summarize that for us?
Sure. So I think this is important when we talk about this conversation at the state level and why we have this conversation in California so often. So it's part of the Democratic Party platform that Democrats support single payer. And, you know, what that looks like, I think has had a varying degree for a lot of folks. If you asked, you know, kind of a traditional progressive, a Bernie Sanders type, they're like single payer or nothing. Like this is their religion. This is what we need. It's kind of a litmus test for being part of the progressive caucus. And I think more moderate Democrats would probably interpret that to mean something more along the lines of we want everybody to have health insurance and we want that coverage to be affordable and meaningful, which is frankly not far from what agents in our association want. Of course, we want the same thing. We want everyone to have health insurance. We want them to, frankly, not just have the insurance. You don't want to give somebody just a card in their pocket. You want that to translate to really meaningful coverage. So anywhere between that spectrum is kind of what we've seen. But the other part of that that's interesting when we speak about progressive or moderate Dems is a reminder for folks that Bernie Sanders in the last presidential election, or primary rather, carried California. It wasn't President Biden, who is more strongly affiliated with the moderate kind of old Democrat way, as opposed to the progressive candidacy of Bernie Sanders. So though some folks may think of California as being kind of, you know, centrist on this, and certainly there are, you know, politicians that would align that way, that they want to, you know, improve upon the Affordable Care Act. They want to make sure that there's more transparency and high quality assurances within our existing healthcare system. There certainly is a path for folks that feel differently and want to see a more progressive model. They like the concept of, you know, the wealthy paying their fair share. And I think there's kind of assumption by some folks that that's how the financing of this would work out. Though, frankly, the devil is in the details, and we know it to be much more complicated in terms of, you know, securing federal financing and how the state would be able to raise the additional funds.
Well, I think that's very important. Thank you for talking about that, because especially today with our, you know, Democratic majority in Sacramento, this is important that people understand that that's where the power is in Sacramento. So people need to be really aware of what's happening there on the political side. So thank you for bringing that up.
Absolutely. And I think for full context of the listening audience, both here in California and anybody joining us from elsewhere, the majority Dorothy is speaking about is Democrats hold over 2/3 supermajorities in both of our houses of the legislature, the Assembly and the Senate, and every statewide office from the governor on down. So when we talk about the politics of healthcare, the reason there's such a strong emphasis in the statements of the Democratic Party platform is because of the magnitude of Democrats here in California. Though, as just kind of a fun fact for our listeners, I do think the size of this state is something that's important to keep in context. For example, there were more votes for Donald Trump in California than in the state of Texas. So that really does speak to our size as a state and divergence of views, though the vast majority are definitely leaning towards the Democratic Party platform.
Yeah, thank you for informing everyone of that. For those that may not be as familiar, if our state were to pass single-payer healthcare legislation, you know, all healthcare as we know it would be gone, correct? I mean, no more, as you mentioned earlier, no more private plans, no more insurance carriers, no more Kaiser, no more Medicare, no more Medi-Cal, no more Covered California. Can you just make sure that everybody understands no more everything?
Sure. Yeah, because again, with the kind of ways that the term single payer or unified financing is used interchangeably, though they do represent very distinct forms of a healthcare system. But the legislation that we've seen previously in AB 1400 and SB 562, it did say that there would be no more private insurance. And for those of you, Dorothy, I've been looking at you, who are ERISA experts, you know, that are thinking, oh, wait, the state can't, you know, regulate large group or fully insured markets. You'd surely have those. That's true that the state doesn't have the authority to regulate those fully insured, self-insured markets. However, groups like the Healthy California for All Commission has looked at ways to get around this. Things like saying that providers would be prohibited from accepting payment outside of the single payer system, or that they would not be eligible to offer services outside of the single payer system. So that's why it's important to understand what single payer is proposing to cover. So when you're talking about all of, you know, vision, dental, and all, you know, traditional medical services, acupuncture, even all kinds of other, you know, fringe benefits as we would consider them now, being covered by this program, it really would mean the end of private health insurance as we know it. Not just an extension to those remaining uninsured, which is a different concept, which is universal coverage, which for the record, our association absolutely supports. We want everyone again to have wonderful, high quality, affordable, meaningful coverage. we just don't envision that being done through a single payer system where you're eliminating all of the options that have been really hard fought by agents and other stakeholders. We don't want to see those dissolved.
Right. Thank you for that. We've had, as you mentioned, several single payer attempts here in California in the past. Can you tell us about some of the past bills, including we had AB 1400, we had Senate Bill 562, we had an Assembly Constitutional Amendment, which was Constitutional Amendment 11. What makes SB 770 different from these? And can you just kind of give us a brief overview of what those past bills were all about?
Yeah, we've touched on that a bit already about, you know, what they intend to cover. And it's, you know, in short, everything. What was different about ACA 11, which is something we haven't touched on, is because AB 1400, which again was the last legislative attempt, didn't contain any financing mechanism, the bill was not being referred to the respective policy hearings to advance through the legislative process. So in order to do that, the proponents of AB 1400, primarily the Nurses Association, put forward an Assembly Constitutional Amendment to address the funding of their single payer system. Again, they kind of tabled and banked on the fact that the federal government would get us halfway there. So the state would only be responsible for coming up with some additional funding resources. And they proposed a number of different ways to do that. So we saw payroll taxes on both employers and employees. We saw some income tax provisions. We saw something that would be considered like a sales tax, but it's a gross receipts tax. So it's not just a profit that a company may be making. It's really every dollar that flows through the business, which you could see, you know, for things like manufacturing or industries that, you know, rely on numerous steps, that tax being repeated at every point in the process, which would certainly, at least for businesses, add some pretty significant concerns in the cost of remaining in California and doing business. So it had kind of a series of taxes that would need to be collected. There's a couple things that it was silent on, frankly, and that is in California, when we have taxes that are raised or brought forward, we have something called Prop 98, which is intended, that was passed by voters, intended to, you know, take a percentage, it's about 40 cents on the dollar, I think, of every tax dollar that comes in, and earmarking that for education. So you would need to go back to the ballot to have voters amend, you know, kind of their intention, which would be very costly for the education folks to say, we're going to have, you know, a tax that's specific to funding healthcare. And then again, there would be a pretty significant shift in the way that healthcare is financed through employers right now. Employers are able to, you know, make write-offs for the contributions that they make to their employees' healthcare. A lot of that is done at the federal level. There's not really a way, you know, easily to just transfer that, you know, what's currently, frankly, a large tax write-off for employers, and just to recapture every dollar into a new system, which is something that proponents often, you know, tout that, like, oh, this is going to be a tax saving for employers, though certainly groups like, you know, the Chamber and other tax folks are on record, you know, in the opposing view, don't agree with those statements.
So basically what you're saying is that Assembly Constitutional Amendment 11 basically said you had to have the funding, and this bill, SB 770, is a way of getting that funding in advance so that they would know they would have that before they could go for other legislation, correct? Is that?
Yeah, I think it's probably fair for me to let you know that ACA 11 didn't even get a hearing. So that bill is not law. That was just something that was put forward as a proposal by a proponents of single payer. SB 770, I should let you know, is law as of a few days ago. Governor Gavin Newsom did sign the bill. And so now it's law in California that our Secretary of Health and Human Services is working on developing, you know, a waiver request from the federal government. They need to have, the secretary has to provide kind of a report by January 1st of 2025, detailing the agency's preliminary analysis. And there will be some stakeholder input that goes into that. So KHIP absolutely, and others are going to be, you know, weighing in on what that waiver requirement would look like, how it would function, in such a way that you don't have an unintended consequence, right, of physicians exiting the state, of healthcare facilities going down, because that remains one of our strongest criticisms of single-payer attempts. It's not that we're opposed to having a conversation about improving healthcare in California. That's a very worthwhile conversation and one agents engage in practice every day. However, we don't want to see facilities close when you absolutely need more facilities, more providers, which single payer proposals in the past have been silent on in terms of their ability to generate and, you know, kind of dismiss passively the concern that you're going to see providers exit or that you may see, you know, how does the state take over what's private facilities right now? Those are going to be very complex, frankly, litigated concepts. You can't just, you know, push a button somewhere or sign a law and say that the state owns the entire healthcare system. That's very complex. And there's reasons that countries that do have single payer have done so, you know, after, you know, World War II and things like that, where you had an entire reconstruction of, you know, societal functions. We're nowhere near that at this point.
Yeah. So this law, as you mentioned, this is basically the first of many steps towards financing a single health payer system here in California. So you mentioned the departments. This would require the California Department of Health and Human Services to do certain things. And I know you just kind of touched on them, but can you just kind of walk us through what California Health and Human Services would have to do?
Yeah, they're putting together a report, not unlike some of the other studies that we've already seen. So when SB 562 was ultimately passed through the Senate, but it was held before moving through the Assembly, which for those of you who maybe track federal politics is more like our Congress, the concept was being studied at that point. Then after AB 1400, you know, wasn't moving forward. We also have the Healthy California for All Commission that was looking at this, what waiver requirements, you know, would need to be undertaken. Various stakeholders, such as the nurses, have said that they've already looked at what the requirements are to pursue a waiver. But this is really more formalizing from a state level what would need to be included in a quote unquote successful waiver application, which I put, you know, successful in quotations because there's so many variables about what it would take for this to be approved at the federal level. Again, the Biden administration has not shown signs of being supportive of single payer and in fact campaigned on very moderate increases in, you know, Medicare and things of that nature, as opposed to entire healthcare reform. Obviously, the Biden administration is tied to the success of the Affordable Care Act under its creation with President Obama back when Biden was vice president. There's a lot more statements wanting to continue success in that program as opposed to a complete overhaul of the system. And then certainly if a Republican administration was to take over in 2024, following that presidential election, or the makeup of either House changes, be it the Senate, where if Republicans regain control there, or if they're able to hold their control in Congress, those would be criteria that would make a request, frankly, kind of dead on arrival, though it is specific in saying the waiver request is of, you know, federal departments. So though that will theoretically be tied to the administration, whether, again, that's a continued Biden administration or otherwise, there likely would still need to be some type of relinquishment of funds because Congress holds the power of the purse. So I think that's what the details they're looking to answer, both at a state level, you know, kind of know the answer before you ask it, I think is kind of a popular political philosophy and for good reason. But that may also be a calculated political risk about like, well, we asked and they said no. So, you know, trying to appease the progressive wings of California voters too. So there's a lot at play.
So let's make this clear. Even if the federal government granted the waivers, California would still need to raise a lot of money to finance such a program. So in addition to the Medicare and Medicaid or Medi-Cal here in California funds, they'd still need to raise a lot of money. Can you tell us approximately what that would be in addition to the federal waivers and the federal financing from the Medicare and Medicaid funds?
Oh, absolutely. So the projections, and these are pretty agreed upon by both proponents and opponents, by the way, of single payer, is about $500 billion with a B dollars per year. if California, through those waivers, was able to secure the Medicare and Medi-Cal dollars, we'd only be about halfway to that, to financing this program. So we would have to raise hundreds of billions of dollars per year through taxes. Again, they could be some of the things considered in ACA 11, where you have employer taxes, employee taxes, you could have gross receipts tax. There would still be a number of taxes that would be needed in order to finance the system, because remember, language within the bills has said there would be no cost sharing. So no, you know, premiums, no copays, no deductibles, but there would still be a significant contribution that's needed from individuals through their taxation system to fund this program every year. And again, you'd be looking at hundreds of billions of dollars, which is what our current state budget is. So this is not a light endeavor.
Right, right. Well, this is a long-term project, correct? It's not something that would start right away, even if it were successful.
Absolutely. You know, don't panic and sell your business. You know, don't think I've got to, you know, head out of the state immediately. This would need to be handled, frankly, responsibly by elected officials. You don't want to see, you know, a departure of physicians. You don't want to see closure of facilities, which we've unfortunately seen in California over the past few years under the existing climate. Those are things that the legislature is very sensitive to, particularly in rural areas or underserved areas. This is going to need to be handled, you know, with a lot of stakeholder buy-in. You don't want to see an exit of employers. You don't want to see an exit of providers. So there's going to need to be some buy-in if the system was to be sustainable.
Well, let's take a step back if we could. In the state of California, there's quite a bit of opposition in the past to single payer. In fact, a few years ago, KHIP's research and polling showed that approximately 65% opposed a new law establishing single payer healthcare, and about 54% strongly opposed it. Are those numbers still true? And can you share some of the background on this prior research?
Yeah, so agents have wanted to, through our association, inform the legislature as they've considered the last few iterations of legislation, how voters are feeling. Because, you know, at the end of the day, it's still a really important metric for the legislature to consider. We talked earlier about how voters, you know, supported a progressive candidate. However, the information, and we did a poll of over 1,000 voters, found that both political parties like their insurance and they don't want to lose it. The thing that they're supporting is individuals who don't have insurance getting covered. Again, hello, agents, we're on the same mission. And so we asked, you know, do you support a government takeover of the entire healthcare system? You know, that's what single payer means. You know, 61% of voters did not like that. 62% of voters did not like learning that it eliminates employer paid healthcare coverage, right? If you, me, and Kim Kardashian just have the same healthcare plan, you know, whether you're employed or not, you no longer have coverage through your employer. No, people like that coverage through their employer. And 63% of Californians did not like hearing that it may hinder the quality of care or medical advancement that they receive. You know, we just went through a pandemic. Having healthcare was incredibly important for folks. And that was a big concern. These results were consistent across geographic regions, political affiliations, though frankly, they may not, you know, want government, you know, takeover of healthcare for different reasons, but genders and ages. You know, Medicare is a very popular program. When you start explaining to seniors who are very high frequency voters, you know, that they're going to lose their healthcare program that they paid into in their working years, they're like, wait a minute, I'm, you know, not enjoying this conversation. Though oftentimes single payer is misbranded as Medicare for all. Medicare still has private sector options. You can purchase additional coverages. The reality, at least in the proposals we've seen so far, is more like Medi-Cal for all, mm-hmm. which is not a popular concept for folks.
Mm-hmm. And when people that are, you mentioned Medicare recipients, they paid into this their whole lives, and they like their programs that they're on, right? And as soon as it becomes personal to them, they say, oh, wait a minute, maybe this isn't something that we want, you know, because it becomes personal. So that's my personal opinion anyway.
You're right. That's what the poll showed too.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it. So can you tell me who are the primary supporters of single payer legislation here in California?
Yeah, again, the last kind of full and comprehensive efforts that we saw were sponsored by the Nurses Association, Though, interestingly, the Nurses Association was very opposed to SB 770. There was concern that if SB 770 was signed into law, as it was, that it would further stall their efforts for more complete packages that do, you know, outline implementation days and coverage and benefits and their ability to negotiate as a union, which plays a very strong role in why they support this. If you only have to negotiate with one employer, you know, be that the state or otherwise, you have a more leveraged position as a union representing nurses. So the nurses were opposed to SB 770. They're typically the sponsors of single payer. Again, it was that Healthy California for All commission that had previously been closely aligned with the nurses in other attempts in sponsoring that legislation. But it does represent kind of a divergence of views that it's better to get honest information from the federal government about whether or not we can, you know, partner with them, as opposed to California going its own way, which really isn't financially viable because despite what you may think about California politics, California has requirements in its constitution that we can't deficit spend, which means that if California in a difficult budget year, which again, we just saw happen, kind of coming out of COVID, we had a big budget deficit this year, you have all of the, you know, programs that the state has to finance, education, infrastructure, wildfire suppression, competing for the same dollars, and you have to cut somewhere. So the federal government can print more money, it can deficit spend. California can't do that. We would be making some very tough choices if California was to pursue a single payer solution absent federal partnership.
Well, thank you for that. And KHIP has joined a lot of coalitions in the past related to single payer. They included groups like the California Medical Association, the California Hospital Association, America's Physician Groups, California Association of Health Plans, the California Chamber of Commerce, and others. Do you know if these groups are also opposing SB 770?
Some of them absolutely are. We partnered this year with the health plans, with the Chamber of Commerce. But there were some folks that have been opposed to those other bills that were, again, kind of moving much further down the line, you know, much quicker. Some of those associations have kind of complicated stances on single payer that, you know, single payer as defined as they would like to see it may be supported, but that includes, you know, a lot of autonomy in terms of, you know, providers continuing to be able to charge what they want to, or hospitals that are able to, you know, maintain independent ownership. Those groups, some of them did take, or at least didn't take a public stance on 770. I think because it's part of, you know, for reasons we've discussed throughout this podcast, kind of an interesting and responsible thing to do to ask the federal government, you know, are you a willing partner? And to do it in such a time frame where we know what the next, you know, presidential administration is, and conversations can take place more honestly about what the financing would look like from the federal government and what California would then be responsible for raising before we go down the path of, you know, committing to all of these benefits and programs with no cost sharing, which frankly sounds like a utopian fairyland. You know, who doesn't want all of those fantastic services for nothing? But
right, just $0 copays. Yeah, exactly. That's mm-hmm. kind of, but it's never, there's nothing's ever free, right? There's always a tremendous cost attached to all of these things. And speaking of costs, and you mentioned taxation, we talked about it earlier, but I want to come back to it. Let's talk more about the taxation related to what we would see if a single payer proposal did pass here in California. Assuming that we were to receive the okay, you know, on getting the Medicare funds and Medi-Cal funds from the federal government directed into the single payer system here in our state, what about the cost of the rest? You mentioned the types of taxes. Can you kind of hit on those again? What kind of taxes we're looking at, and what kind of dollars would be, and, or percentages would be involved from the other forms of taxation?
Yeah, so we don't know because we haven't, as a state, enacted single-payer framework legislation. So this would just be speculation on what's been proposed. So the proponents of single-payer, the Nurses Association, again, had talked about a gross receipts tax, which would be at 2.3% of gross income for a business over $2 million. But again, $2 million can easily pass through a business that's nowhere near the money that they're actually making. So So, you know, considering those type of taxes on things like automobiles, on infrastructure, would greatly increase the cost of those goods, which, you know, as we understand it, does serve as kind of a regressive tax on those who are lower income, because they're going to be paying it as well on the cost of goods and services. The payroll tax that I talked about earlier, again, had been looking at something like a 1% increase on payroll taxes, or for employers that have more than 50 employees, they had proposed a 1.25% payroll tax on wages and compensation of their employees. And then we saw a payroll tax, which would be the employee share on income over basically $50,000. And then also a personal income tax on high income earners, which California is very reliant on as a tax base. They pay a significant portion of our state's general fund. And in total, that would really only get us to basically $163 billion. So we would still be short of the financing that the state needs to produce to make up, you know, $250 billion per year.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. That's a tremendous amount of money. So I just want to make sure people are aware of this, because it's a lot. It's a lot of dollars, both individually, your payroll tax from your employer, your payroll tax, your own personal payroll tax, other taxes. It's just a lot coming from the taxation, and it's just something that we're not used to here in California. We have a lot of taxes with the gas tax and everything else here, but this is something that would really hit home to a lot of people. Let's talk about physicians. Do you think a lot of physicians would retire or leave the state if single payer passed here in California?
It's probably the legislative advocate in me that I don't like to speak for groups that I don't represent, but I'll just kind of, you know, speak as an individual. Certainly there would be concern that a lot of physicians, particularly those that may be, you know, owners in a physician group right now, or that are employees of organizations that they're very happy working for, they may not want to, right? We can't, you know, force indentured servitude, right? So it certainly there would be some that would retire. I think broadly speaking, we do have an aging workforce in the medical industry, and we haven't, you know, had enough slots in medical school programs in order to meet the existing demand in California. And certainly there would be an increased demand if all of a sudden there's no cost sharing, right?
Right.
Folks, there absolutely would be an increase in utilization, which is something that we were critical of previous financial assessments that have been done by proponents talking about what the savings of their programs would be. They really were not, you know, calculating in the increase in services that would likely be a demand if all of a sudden you have, you know, dental coverage maybe for the first time and you have, you know, no contribution you're able to make. For example, there would be a lot of increased costs associated with those changes.
Right, right. And what about wait times for services? I would assume it would be similar to other countries such as Canada. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, if you don't find a way to increase facilities and providers, I think wait times are the natural consequence. If you have more people in your program, but you haven't developed new ways to serve them, then certainly you would see some type of constraint on the existing system being able to meet the demand. So a byproduct would conceivably be certainly longer wait times.
Right. So what's the next step? What do consumers need to do if they don't want single payer here in California?
I think even just understanding what the concept is, right, which is something that we hope that agents are able to communicate, that, you know, we want everyone to be covered. We want it to be high quality coverage that you're receiving. We want it to be affordable. Let's absolutely engage in legislative efforts that support those objectives. However, the unintended consequences of something like single payer would be astronomical. So making sure that they're willing to contact their local representative, because so much of politics is local, they need to provide, you know, counter narrative for a very, very vocal minority that says that this is the only solution, to say, I disagree. I don't want to lose the Medicare I worked my whole life for, but I'm willing to, you know, as an active citizen, you know, engage in what better policy reforms may be. So I think being informed and then taking that time to reach out, we as an association try to make it easy. We have things called Operation Shout, where we, you know, have crafted a message, be it from an agent voice, or we have communications that agents are able to forward to their employers, to, you know, their individual clients who could communicate with their representative that they don't think that, you know, a particular policy measure is the right way to achieve it. Though we certainly agree with the objective. So it takes, you know, 10 seconds. We do the work behind the scenes for you with draft language. We connect you with your representative who some, you know, individuals may not know. And I think that's an effective means of communication. So don't dismiss, you know, every piece of mail you see. You know, it's really easy to do in today's society to be like, oh, I'm, you know, bombarded. Aren't we all? But to know that these conversations matter and to take a little bit of time to do that.
Yeah, thank you for that. How important is membership in an organization like KHIP for agents and for their employer clients? And I know that you and I obviously are a little prejudiced in favor of this because we're both involved in this. But how important do you think this membership in these sort of organizations is when it comes to big, big topics like this?
It's so critical. You know, I've spoken with so many agents over the years as we've looked at these legislative attempts, and truly, the resounding narrative isn't like, oh, I'm just going to lose my job, which, by the way, would be a byproduct of a single payer system. The systems do envision only not-for-profit workers being able to service anyone with needs as they utilize the healthcare system. And I don't think anyone feels like they get phenomenal service at the DMV, sorry, DMV, you know, or other state programs. We've seen shortcomings. Yeah, it's true. Like the private system for sure, you know, public-private system does have pitfalls, but it's got a better reputation for customer service than other programs that are entirely state-funded and run. But if people don't participate in an organization like KHIP, there really isn't a collective voice for agents and those who work with agents about the impact that this is going to have on their clients, not just from a healthcare delivery standpoint, which there are other stakeholders that make those points, right? The physicians groups are going to speak on that. Some of the hospital groups are, but really as an advocate for the consumer, right? Be that your employer clients, be that your individuals that you're helping with Covered California or seniors with Medicare and the like, that speaking as the voice of the consumer on what this would look like, you know, and nobody knows better than an agent who sits across from them, not just to get them enrolled in coverage, but to utilize it, what that would be to not have that is critical. And frankly, if not you, then who, right? This organization is sustained by a very small number of like heartfelt agents that are engaging in the work to have successes to, you know, eliminate balance billing and to improve access to facilities and to make sure that the right benefits are being covered at the right price points. It's critical. So thank you if you're listening to this, if you are a member, and if not, you're being carried, man.
For sure. Thanks so much for taking the time to explain all this to our listeners. I really appreciate your being with me today.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. I love having you on. You know that. If anybody would like more information, or would like to reach out to you or to KHIP, how would they do that?
They can visit us at khip.com. C-A-H-I-P, standing for California Agents and Health Insurance Professionals.com. Or if they want to get more information at the national level, they can certainly reach us at NABIP. National Association of Benefit and Insurance Professionals, NABIP.org. And there's information to join, and you get a 3-for-1. Membership in this organization provides you with representation at the national level, which there's tons going on in healthcare that's impacted there, at the state level, and then also at your local chapter level, so that you're able to engage and be mentored and mentor agents in your local area working on issues that are of regional importance to you.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And for those of you that are not members of KHIP, we highly suggest that you become one now. And if this wasn't enough reason to do so, hopefully it is, we do highly encourage you to become a member. And be sure to attend one of your local chapters or your state meetings, and be sure to stay up to date. Well, thanks again, Faith. I really appreciate it. And to everybody else out there, stay safe, stay healthy, and stay tuned for the next episode of the Benefits Executive Roundtable. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for compliance tips, cost containment ideas, new trends, and decision-making tools. This podcast is produced by Advanced Benefit Consulting, Anaheim, California. All views expressed are those of the host or interviewees and not necessarily those of Advanced Benefit Consulting. Information contained herein should not be construed as legal advice. We always recommend that you consult with your legal counsel as situations do vary. Ms. Koshu can be reached at 714-693-9754 extension 3. Toll free at 866-658-3835 or visit our website at advancedbenefitconsulting.com.